I'm Marty Moscowain. Welcome to Radio Times. In a few days, it will be Christmas Eve, time to get the family together to watch those traditional favorites. It's a Wonderful Life, White Christmas, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, Elf, Miracle on 34th Street, The Polar Express, or Die Hard. Guest Doogie Horner has watched Die Hard untold numbers of times and says it might be the perfect Christmas movie involving terrorists, lots of gunplay, car crashes, a high-rise under construction, and Bruce Willis as John McClane trying to get home to his children for Christmas. Doogie Horner reworked the poem A Visit from St. Nicholas to tell the Die Hard story for his new book, A Die Hard Christmas, the illustrated holiday classic. He's a comedian based here in Philadelphia, a writer, and joins us today on Radio Times to read from his new book, to talk about why Die Hard may be the perfect Christmas movie, and to reminisce about the time he won over a hostile audience and on America's Got Talent. Doogie Horner, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you here. Well, let's do what we always do on NPR, which is start with a reading when interviewing an author.
All right, here we go.
All right.
'Twas the night before Christmas, and up in the tower, everyone was partying except one wallflower. John McClane missed his wife. Things just weren't the same since Holly had moved west and changed her last name. He tried to win her back, but still she said no, while unbeknownst to them, there was trouble below. A truck had pulled up, and who should disembark but 14 men whose intentions were dark. They spoke not a word and unloaded big crates. They cut the phone lines and locked all the gates. Carl swept the ground floor, shooting every guard dead, while visions of bearer bonds danced in his head.
Where did this idea come from?
It wasn't even my idea. I had done a Die Hard coloring book for HarperCollins. And
why?
Why? They asked me if I had any coloring book ideas. And, you know, at that time, I think there was that adult coloring book craze that lasted a week or two.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, I think people like doing these coloring books. It's a nostalgia thing, so we should do some for 80s movies. And I suggested Die Hard because it's one of my favorite movies. Mm-hmm. So I did the Die Hard coloring book. And then Insight, who's the publisher that did this, called me up and they said, hey, you're the Die Hard guy, right? do you want to do another one? So it was their idea, actually.
So you're the Die Hard guy. You're comfy with that?
Yeah, that's fine. It's better than being the Under Siege guy.
Exactly. So it's funny. I went online to find out, so why is Die Hard a Christmas movie? And there's some obvious things, which is it takes place during Christmas.
Yeah,
what else?
There's so many reasons. I didn't even know that there was a debate about whether or not it was a Christmas movie until I made this book and people told me about the debate. I mean, it happens at Christmas, but that doesn't make it a Christmas movie. I would say what makes it a Christmas movie, besides all the obvious things, it takes place at Christmas. It's the holiday party. There's Christmas lights. There's Christmas trees. There's Christmas music. It's about – the theme of the film is figuring out what's really important. It's not about presents. It's about family. And that's what John is trying to do in this movie. He's trying to get his family back together. And the terrorists, who are not actually terrorists, they're robbers. But
they feel like terrorists, though.
Yeah. Whoever said that we were terrorists, they're actually robbers. But so that storyline is actually not as important as John getting his family back together. And it just so happens the two plot lines dovetail.
And a really bad guy. I mean, I don't know if you always need that for a Christmas story, but certainly Alan Rickman is,
yeah,
what, Hans Gruber, right?
Yeah, and he's kind of like Scrooge or the Grinch, you know. He's like, I don't like Christmas, and I'm going to blow up this building. I don't know if that parallel works. But,
yeah.
But anyways, I think it's pretty clearly a Christmas movie. But I understand why people say it's not. It's just like, well, too many people die, which I get. After you played that sound clip of just like, oh, dear, oh. I was like, oh, okay. Well, when you say it like that, it doesn't sound like a Christmas movie.
But I read an interview with you, but you also say, you know, if you think about Home Alone, which could also, I mean, in many ways is a Christmas movie, here's a child that gets forgotten, A Wonderful Life, a banker who's contemplating suicide. So it's not like all Christmas movies have to have this sort of lovely underpinning.
No, Gremlins, similar. People also don't consider that a Christmas movie. I guess that's a bad example. But anyways, but yeah, I think Christmas is a heavy time for a lot of people, and it's the end of the year. It makes you think about your life, and it makes you reflect on what's truly important.
And have you gotten this debate going again with your Die Hard Christmas? And I think it's interesting that it's been out a month or so, and it's already a holiday classic. I mean, that's pretty good.
It's already a classic. It didn't take long.
But has this jump-started the debate over Die Hard as a Christmas movie?
Apparently the debate has been going on this whole time, because I've heard from so many people that write to me and they say, thank you. I argue with my family about this and they don't believe me that it's a Christmas movie. We have this debate every year. So apparently it's something that's been going on. The book didn't start the debate.
Well, let me give out the phone number in case people want to debate this issue on Radio Times. And it's 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Talking with Doogie Horner about Die Hard, the movie. There's now Die Hard, the Christmas book. And he took that poem that we all know, A Visit from St. Nicholas, or Twas the Night Before Christmas, to tell this Die Hard story. We had a short reading for you to get a flavor for the book. So do join our conversation. I'm curious about how many times you've watched Die Hard and what your first experience was.
You know, I don't even know how many times I've watched it. First of all, I'm bad at counting.
Are you? Truly?
I don't know how old I am. I never know what year it is. So I'm not sure how many times I've watched it. It's a lot. And I can't even remember the first time I watched it, because I was a kid at the time, and I'm sure it just came on, you know, I just saw it on
TV,
TBS or TNT or something, you know, like that. So I don't even remember. It's just always been part of my life.
Now, you were telling me before going in the air that you actually saw it in a movie theater at the Troc, right?
Yeah, recently.
Just a couple of days ago, having never seen this movie in a movie theater.
I never saw it on the big screen, and it was crazy. It was a fresh experience. You know, watching a movie with other people. I'm a big advocate of seeing, like, going out to movie theaters to see films. There's this group here in Philly, Exhumed Films, that shows old movies, and we always go to see them. Seeing a movie in the theater with other people, it's just a different experience. You hear where they laugh, you hear where they are quiet, and it's different. It's a group experience. Yeah. So the Troc showed it on Monday. South Street Cinema, I think, is showing it tonight if people are looking for another opportunity to see it on the big screen. I highly recommend it.
Can you lip sync along with the movie
if
you watch it that many times? You know all the lines?
Yeah. Yeah. My favorite line, which a lot of people don't
is
quote, is, "You're very fast, Argyle," when Bruce is in the limo with Argyle, the limo driver, and Argyle won't shut up. And Bruce says, "You're very fast, Argyle."
That's a good line.
I love that line.
Are there other Christmas movies you like?
I love
it. Or have watched maybe almost as obsessively?
I've watched It's a Wonderful Life as many times.
Really?
And I would actually say that's my favorite Christmas movie, not Die Hard. It just gets me. Every time I'm like, all right, this time I won't cry. And every time I cry like a baby. It's embarrassing in front of my whole family. Just poor John, or wait, George.
George.
Old mossback George. I feel so bad for him. Poor guy.
But it works, right?
Yeah, it's a great movie. It's fantastic.
Let's talk a little bit about your comedy career, I guess growing up in comedy, or how you discover comedy. Were you a funny kid?
I was a weird kid. I was extremely unpopular.
Truly?
Yeah, truly. I did not get along with other kids. I guess I was funny. I mean, I was weird. All the kids called me weird.
In that kind of nerdy, weirdy way?
I guess so. I think that was actually really good. I don't think I ever would have done comedy if I'd been popular as a kid, because I think a lot of people, the reason they don't want to do comedy, well, there's lots of reasons. First of all, it's not a good job, but
it's hard, right?
They don't want to do it because, like, you're like, well, if I get up on stage and I embarrass myself. But I had been embarrassed so many times already, that didn't hold any fear for me. So I think it was actually really good. It seems like a lot of comedians don't really fit in. And so they sort of learn not to respect social norms and not to worry about it, like if everybody's – and it helps to have like an unusual viewpoint.
Yeah. What would you say yours is?
I don't know. I don't know. I just know all the time. It actually bothers me. A lot of times I'll say something and I'm not trying to be funny and people laugh at me. I'm like, what? It wasn't a joke. I was serious.
Well, I'm thinking about that, I guess, what, loner kid? I mean, loner kids often become writer. I mean, they often become creative people because they watch other people.
Mm-hmm.
Was that true for you?
Yeah. Yeah, I was a choir kid. I read a lot. Just bored by reality.
Right.
I don't know.
But at one point, you must have said, you know, I'm going to try comedy. What was that?
Well, it was pretty late. It was when I was, I don't remember how long ago it was. Like I said, I don't count. But it was, I was already an adult. I was here in Philly. At that time, I was playing table tennis a lot. And
for money or just
no,
for fun?
No, just for fun. Yeah, I was a hustler. I was a table tennis hustler. I was very wealthy. And I was an artist. I drew and I wrote and I was making movies. But those were all sort of very solitary pursuits. And I wanted to do something else that got me out of the house. And so Helium Comedy Club had just opened up recently and somebody told me there was an open mic. And so I went and tried it.
Really?
And I loved it.
What did you love? And was it a kind of love at first sight? Or I mean, that first time you went on the stage and told jokes?
Yeah,
or told
absolutely.
Stories?
I like that you can just think of something and then say it. When you write a book, you can sell a lot of copies and a lot of people read it, but then you don't know if they liked it or not. Or like maybe people will tell you. But like if you do a comedy show, even if there's only 10 people there, you know those 10 people heard you. Even if they don't like what you said, even they're like, I hate you. you ruined my date. You know, you're like, well, you heard my thought. And so I like that instant feedback. You can just think of something and say it. You can work on it all day,
mm-hmm.
like while you're in line at the grocery store or whatever. You can be thinking about jokes. You don't have to be sitting at a computer or sitting at a desk.
And is that how you work? I mean, which is it all mapped out or are you willing to kind of go with what happens?
I write it down, but then I also think about it and then I do a little bit of a mix of both. You know, you write it down, you think about it, and then when you go it on stage, I try to like think about it, memorize it, forget it, get back on stage, and then retell it from my memory so that it
sounds fresh to you.
Yeah, and so it's more like how would I actually say it to you as opposed to like me just reciting a thing I have memorized.
You get nervous or sort of is nervous / excited? Sometimes those two things can feel the same.
I don't get nervous anymore, only if it's like a certain show. My friend Seth has this show in New York called Sweet, and he hosts it by sitting on the side of the stage and staring at you your whole set. And I always get nervous then, or like if there's a comedian I really respect in the room. Like I work with Todd Barry a lot, and sometimes if I'm doing my set and I see him walk into the back of the room and stare and watch my set, then I'll get nervous. But usually I don't anymore.
Let's take a very short break. An email from Pamela. Don't forget, a lot of people died in the biblical Christmas story, too, specifically the babies and toddlers of Bethlehem, Matthew 2:16-18.
Oh, geez.
Talking with Doogie Horner about Die Hard Christmas and his comedy career. You can join us at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscone. I'm talking with Doogie Horner about his new book, Die Hard Christmas, an illustrated holiday classic, or I should say the illustrated holiday classic. He's a comedian based here in Philadelphia, and he was on America's Got Talent back in 2010. It didn't start out well, but let's listen to it and see how it ended up.
I don't trust pregnant people. I feel like they're hiding something. Have you guys already? I haven't even started.
This crowd is just tired. They're over it.
Everything I know I learned on the streets, except breakdancing, which I learned at summer Bible camp. My friend asked me, he said, if you could be any animal, what animal would you choose to be? And I said, an eagle. And he said, why? So you could fly? And I said, no, so I could finally have sex with eagles.
I love that.
Have you guys heard about the rising? When I tell people I'm famous, nobody believes me. I'm unbelievably famous. You are terrible people. What's the matter with you? I have jokes I'm going to tell. Oh, forget it. I'm out of here. I'm going to confound you people. I'm going to hunt you down like bugs. I'm going to squish you in your houses. This funny hairdo. What's going on with your facial hair? You got a problem, buddy? I like you. I hate you. I like you. I hate you. I like you. You're cool. You guys are cool. You suck. Go home. You're great. This judge thinks I suck. I can see why. I'm going to lose my voice in 3 seconds.
Oh, I haven't heard
I
that
was
in a
watching
while.
You listen to yourself. I don't know. Was that imploding on stage? Although you, I can't tell if they were saying yay because you
they were
about
not saying yay. Near the end, then
near
people,
the end,
near
I
the
heard
end,
a couple.
People started to cheer. Half right. the crowd started to cheer because people love it when you tell them off.
Is, like, that, is that what it was?
I think they liked it. That people like it when you stand up for yourself. It's weird when people watch reality television. You want two things. You want to see people fail, first of all, because you want to feel better about all the times you didn't try to do something, right? A lot of people on reality television, they're going out on a limb. They're like, I think I'm a great dancer. And then they go up and they're like, you can't dance. And it makes you feel better about that time when you didn't go to dance school. Instead, you went to business college.
But and then, you still can't dance.
Yeah.
Right.
At the same time, you want to see people succeed. So it's weird. So, like, people were booing me at first because they're like, you're not
funny.
Did you
expect
that,
by the way?
I expected it not to go well. I didn't expect it to go that bad. I screened the F word because they buzzed me. And they told you, they're like, if we buzz you, just keep going. But they didn't tell you how loud the buzzer was going to be. And it scared me. And I went, ah! They were like, don't – if you hear the buzzer, just keep going. And also, don't curse. And I did the two things back to back. But, I mean, at that point, I was used to being booed. I got booed many, many times. I still get heckled all the time. I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
I seem to get heckled more than most mm-hmm. people. And so I wasn't exactly surprised, but I didn't think it was going to go that bad. But
is
I knew
it, kind
it wasn't
going to
go well.
A badge? I mean, that went viral. We just played it. It's, what, 7 years old, and it
yeah.
still lives on, right?
Yeah.
Is it kind of a badge for you? This happened to me on America's Got Talent?
Yeah, it was a fun experience. I don't want to be one of those people that – there are these videos that's like, comedian destroys heckler. I don't want to propagate the idea that that's a great relationship, this idea that it's fun to be adversarial, that it's fun to make fun of people. I don't right. actually like to do that. I don't think that's the point of comedy, however.
But there you were.
But however, having said that,
audience, right.
if you heckle me, I will yell at your face. I will do it.
We got some diehard comments, questions here. We've got Becky from Glen Mills. Becky, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty.
Hi there.
I just want to let you know that I love your show.
Thank you.
I am 38 years old, and I had never seen Die Hard. I heard this debate going on, and I watched it last night, and I definitely agree that it is a Christmas movie.
Wow. And based on what criteria, Becky?
Well, I didn't have any criteria going into it, but I liked that at first, I think when the movie is early on, he's whistling Christmas tunes.
Right.
And I thought, yeah, of course, this is definitely
it's Christmas. And that was enough for you, right, Becky?
It was.
Well, there's one for you.
Thank Doogie. You, Becky.
Thank you, Becky, for calling in. An email from Mark. Did you like or do you like Die Hard 2? Will there be a Christmas sequel poem?
I don't know if we're going to do Die Hard 2. We discussed it. I like Die Hard 2. I don't like it as much as Die Hard 1. I will say 1 and 2 are the only two films I consider Die Hard movies.
Right.
I think the rest are so different in format. They're more just like action movies with Bruce Willis in them. His character just becomes so superhuman. They change locations too much. The third movie is really more like a Lethal Weapon movie. The script was actually supposed to be a Lethal Weapon script. Uh-huh. And when you view it like that, it makes a lot more sense.
An email from Matt. Are there any parallels between Die Hard plot and the actual Christmas story as told in the Bible? I have no agenda. I'm just asking this out of naked curiosity.
I don't know. I never thought about that before. I'm going to say not many. Maybe not so much. But I don't know. I never thought about it before. It's a good point.
Yeah. An email from Rick, who seems like he might know the answer to this. Ask Doogie about the connection between action movies and European painting styles.
Oh.
Obviously a leading question here.
Yeah, they're heavy. He's probably seen my talk. I have a talk I give about the parallels between the development of visual art in Italy during the Renaissance and the development of American action films. And the Die Hard is the Mona Lisa. It's this perfect balance of mostly reality with a little dash of animation.
Right.
But then action movies after that were like, oh, look how good stuff gets when we add a little bit of fantasy. And so they add more fantasy and you end up with Con Air, which is like mannerism, which is the art period that came after the High Renaissance. And then you got
I'd taken this class in college.
Yeah, this
I'm
is
just
not
saying.
A class. If anybody would like to make it a college class, please contact me. But yeah, it's a long theory I have that people seem to agree with. I don't, but it's just a theory.
We're going to end with another reading, and you have some really fascinating names of trees.
Oh, yeah. I made a list of pretentious tree names for McSweeney's. Would you like me to read it?
I would.
Okay. Chester Log Snobwood, Olive Linseed Split Shingles, Nedwin Linwood, Crosby Aspen Bird Nest, Downing Sapling Phelps, Miles Twigston Hill, Noble Surfer Ellingswood, Ashton Fir Mapleheart, Hickory Mockernut, Elijah Wood, Leaf Barkmont III, Walden Holt Larch, Newberry Fir, Holly Stem Turnbluth, and Benson Loblolly Pine.
Those sound like names you might find in the Social Register. I'm
right?
Just saying.
But they're all trees too. Willoughby Yew, Digby Applewood. Anyways, it's longer, but it's so long. If I read the whole thing, you'd be like, we get it.
We got to get out of here.
They're pretentious trees.
Well, on that note, Doogie Horner, thank you so much for coming in and joining us on Radio Times.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. And he does have a new book, The Die Hard Christmas, the Illustrated Holiday Classic. Also had a book that came out just a while ago called Some Very Interesting Cats Perhaps You Weren't Aware Of. And we do want to close things out with the song that was played at the very end of Die Hard. It's Vaughn Monroe's 1945 rendition of Let It Snow, featured in Die Hard as the credits close.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. It doesn't show signs of stopping, and I've bought some corn for popping. The lights are turned way down low. Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. When we finally kiss goodnight.